Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches. Napa!
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide. Napa!
This is Denny Hamlin.
He's on the front straightaway. The checkered flag is out.
Following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR.
It takes a lot to win the Daytona 500.
Jimmy Johnson's going to win the 48th Daytona 500.
It takes even more to be a legend of the great American race.
They come to the tri-oval. Earnhardt will not be able to do anything with him. Jeff Gordon wins the Daytona 500 for a second time.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race.
Ladies and gentlemen, this crowd is going wild at Daytona as Petty takes the checkered flag and wins the Daytona 500.
Legends of the Great American Race is brought to you by Sunoco. From NASCAR to your car, Sunoco Fuel helps your car reach peak performance. And by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Now, here's your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of NASCAR Live as we honor some of the legends of the Daytona 500. I'm Mike Bagley. All of us here at the Motor Racing Network are excited to bring you another year of NASCAR racing, and we can't wait for Sunday's Daytona 500. Tonight, we'll honor six legends who have multiple Harley J. Earl trophies and relive their historic wins. We'll feature Cale Yarborough's thrilling last lap pass to win the 500 in 84. We'll relive Jeff Gordon's second 500 win in 1999. Dale Earnhardt Jr. outdueling Tony Stewart in 2004. Jimmy Johnson starting off his magical 2006 season in a very big way. Denny Hamlin edging Martin Truex Jr. in one of the closest finishes in NASCAR history. And of course, when speaking of Daytona 500 legends, the king himself immediately comes to mind. We'll flash back to one of seven wins for Richard Petty in the great American race. But first, you don't necessarily have to be a driver to be a legend of the great American race. That was never more true than in the case of Ken Squire. We lost Ken before Thanksgiving, and quite a loss it's been. Ken helped get the Daytona 500 to national television, where he coined the term, the great American race. It was those efforts and his efforts here at MRN that led him to be a NASCAR Hall of Famer. You see, before Ken was a part of so many great 500 telecasts on CBS, he called several for us here on the Motor Racing Network. And here are some of his best calls from those races.
This is Ken Squire inviting you to join us for the running of the world's greatest stock car race, the Daytona 500 Miler.
Richard Petty drifts up into the third groove, looking real good, real smooth. He heads through turn number four. Richard Petty on his way to the checkered flag down toward the tri-oval. Headed for about $40,000+ for his effort this afternoon, Richard Petty, random of North Carolina, has won the Daytona 500 for the third time. Richard Petty moves down into turn number one. It's over. The pressure is off. He can lean back in the seat for just a moment and take a deep breath. The car has held together. The Petty Plymouth has won the Daytona 500 Miler.
And a good day, ladies and gentlemen. Hello from the world's finest motor speedway, the Daytona International Speedway. Welcome to the 18th running of the most spectacular automobile race in the world, the Daytona 500.
You're going to be side by side as they exit the bank and head for the finish line.
Richard Petty goes back in front. They both spin. They're in the wall. Petty is sliding, slamming into the wall. He's coming down toward the finish line. Will he make it? He's still moving. The car stops 300, 400 feet shy of the finish line. Pearson is still running. Here's Petty trying to fire to come across the line. David Pearson moving down through as they come to the stripe. The winner is car number 21. It's going to be, I believe, Pearson's victory. We'll just have to wait and see. An amazing finish. Richard Petty's car demolished in the front end as well as car number 21. An unbelievable finish. A terrible crash. Both cars in the wall. Both drivers kept on going. Richard Petty comes across the line, but in front of him was car number 21. They were both down in the grass on the inside part of the racetrack, and we'll wait for a decision as to the victory in the Daytona 500 this afternoon. It looks like car number 21, David Pearson, has come home victorious.
All of us at MRN are thinking about Ken this week as we gear up for the 2024 renewal of the Great American Race this Sunday. Coming up, we'll revisit Cale Yarborough's thrilling victory in the 1984 Daytona 500.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy and four tires to Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Money stop here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to a special edition of NASCAR Live. We start our path through some of the legends of the Daytona 500 in 1984. In 83, Cale Yarborough captured his third Daytona 500 crown with a thrilling last lap pass. Well, in 1984, history repeated itself. Tim Catalfambo has the story.
Hello, everyone. Today, it's the main event for Speed Week's 1984, the richest stock car race in the world, and without a doubt, the most prestigious spectacle in motor racing, the Daytona 500.
As the NASCAR Cup Series ready to begin its 1984 campaign, all eyes were on Daytona Beach, Florida for the 26th running of the Great American Race. During Speed Weeks, plenty of storylines developed, making this one of the most anticipated 500s ever. Chief among those storylines was Cale Yarborough once again emerging as the favorite to win the big race. Yarborough won the race in 1983, and as defending champion, he cemented himself even further as the favorite by winning the pole, recording a staggering time of 44.588 seconds around the 2.5-mile super speedway. Yarborough backed that up by winning his dual race on the Thursday before the 500. An interesting chief rival emerged, though, in Bobby Allison. Allison was the winner of the second duel and entered 1984 as the defending series champion. After the President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, gave the command to start engines, the defending Daytona 500 winner and the defending series champion were among the drivers who led the field to the green flag.
All right, I've heard the traditional phrase many times, and I'm honored to be able to say it for the first time myself for the 26th annual Daytona 500. Gentlemen, start your engine.
They are down into the dogleg part of the Daytona Speedway and making that left-hand turn onto pit road. Here's the Pontiac Pace Car. And at about 100 miles an hour, they come down. Mr. Howard waves the green, and the Daytona 500 is underway, the 26th annual. Cale Yarborough gets a good jump on the start as he heads for turn number one and pulls away a bit.
Those who predicted the race would be a battle between Yarborough and Allison looked very smart in the early stages of the event as the two future Hall of Famers swapped the lead back and forth an amazing 11 times in just the first 37 laps.
Allison makes a bid for the lead.
Bobby Allison set him up and swept underneath. It's Allison at the point. Yarborough second. Buddy Baker is third.
Down the back straightaway, jumping out like a jack-in-the-box to the inside is Cale Yarborough. He wants the lead again. He pulls side-by-side with Bobby Allison.
Yarborough and Allison have been playing leapfrog up front for about five laps now, and once again, it's Cale going to the point. Allison goes second. Baker third with Bonnet fourth. Labonte's fifth, and Harry Gant goes sixth.
The first two leaders not named Yarborough and Allison turned out to be two of the most successful drivers drivers in the history of the sport. Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty both took turns at the point as the race neared the 100-mile mark. By that point in the race, six drivers had already exited the event due to mechanical failures. But as the race progressed, even more drivers and more big names fell victim to similar issues. Allison's early run of contention was over after just 61 laps, and Petty's run at another Harley J. Earl Trophy lasted only 92 laps, as both drivers were derailed due to camshaft problems.
Bobby Allison is on pit road, the 1983 Winston Cup champion, and Jerry Punch, the hood, is up on that car, and that is not a good sign.
Richard Petty has slowed up dramatically. The car is coasting up on the high bank. The entire field comes streaming by. Yarborough has grabbed the lead. Earnhardt second. Petty in trouble.
Petty looking for a way to move to the inside of the racetrack as all the other cars dip inside of him. Now back up high. Petty down on the apron. Looks like he's heading for pit road.
Shortly after Petty's problems, another big name fell out of the race, this time due to a crash.
We've got trouble up in turn number two as spinning down low on the racetrack goes Rusty Wallace. No harm done as Rusty gets the car off onto the grass. This is just about 50 feet from where Rusty took off on one of the wildest rides in stock car history last year in the Thwin 125 qualifier. It's a new ride for Rusty. He's in good shape. The engine is off and he's unbuckling.
It will bring out the fourth caution flag of the afternoon here at Daytona in the 500 as Rusty Wallace spins his car just going off the number two corner.
That Rusty Wallace accident in turn two meant the race would cross the halfway mark under the caution flag. The leader at the halfway mark was Earnhardt, who with Allison's exit had emerged as Yarborough's biggest obstacle in becoming a back-to-back winner of the Great American Race. Earnhardt wasn't the only name to insert himself into the conversation, though, in the back half of the event. Outside pole sitter Terry Labonte led his first circuit on lap 106, and Darrell Waltrip led for the first time on lap 142.
There's a rumble in the jungle. Nine cars on the front lead spots. Now dropping out of line, it is Terry Labonte. He wants a piece of the top spot. He's got some pushing help from Earnhardt. They're three wide in turn three.
Labonte looks at the inside of your leader, Bonnet, and all of a sudden it's Terry Labonte putting the 44 up front. The Piedmont Airlines plane flying away here with Earnhardt behind him. Your leader right now is Waltrip. He's got Labonte right on his tail.
Ricky Rudge efforts of getting his lap back for naught as he pedals backwards through the field. The coming off number four corner, kick up the speedy try, and it's two cars beginning to pull away right now.
Waltrip's first stint at the front was very short-lived as it was just one lap later Yarborough got back out in front. Waltrip, though, found his way back to the point during what many expected to be the final pit stop cycle of the race. With Waltrip out front, drivers had one final shot to come down pit road when what would be the final caution flag flew with less than 25 laps to go.
We're under caution at Daytona as Buddy Arrington has just lost the engine on his Chrysler coming across the start-finish line, and it will put us under caution for the seventh time this afternoon. And Benny Parsons, this is going to be a break for a lot of drivers.
During that caution period caused by Buddy Arrington's engine expiring, some drivers did come to pit road, but Waltrip, Yarborough, Earnhardt, and Labonte all stayed on the track to preserve the track position that they hoped would help them win the 1984 Daytona 500. Those four, with a few others mixed in, got the green flag for the final restart of the event on lap 183.
We are back to green at Daytona to conclude the 500 this afternoon. Harold Kinder waves the flag and Darrell Waltrip sails off into turn number one.
Waltrip held the lead for nearly all of that final run, but coming to the white flag, he still had Earnhardt and Yarborough breathing down his neck.
Harold Kinder displays the white flag, and it is the last time around. Less than 2.5 miles to go. They're shuffling off to turn one, single file.
Well, now you know the move is going to come. The question is where, when, and by whom. Waltrip with two car lengths on Yarborough. Yarborough takes to the top of the racetrack. Now life's down into the draft, right behind. He's opened up a car length on Dale Earnhardt. They're on the backstretch.
After waging war for 499 miles, it comes down to this. Down the back straightaway. Three quarters of the way down this 3,000-foot back chute. Yarborough to the inside.
Dale Yarborough goes low on Dale Waltrip and takes over the lead. Waltrip slides up. Nobody else. It's Elliott getting past Gant, moving into fifth. A little squirrely, but he hangs on. And Yarborough pulling away.
Here comes a charge from turn four. Can anybody do anything? Kale is gone. He'll win the Daytona 500, but the battle is for second right now as Earnhardt squeezes past Darrell Waltrip and will finish in the number two spot. Waltrip will finish third. From there back, they are stacked three wide as they cross the stripe. Kale Yarborough, wins the 26th annual Daytona 500 in a hair-raising finish in one of the best races we have ever seen at Daytona. It is all over. Yarborough will go to victory lane. It will be his fourth Daytona 500 win.
So for the second straight year, Cale Yarborough won Stock Car Racing's biggest event with a thrilling last lap pass. Not only was it Yarborough's second straight win in the Daytona 500, but his fourth overall.
Cale, tell us about the last lap. What kind of strategy you might have, and did things go as you had wanted them to early on with that white flag?
Well, you know, I was a little concerned about what I was going to do after that caution flag. I thought I could get away from them, but if I was sitting there in second, and I knew if Darrell would stay right at it, that I'd have a pretty good shot at it from second. So I just sat there, and Darrell was awful strong down the straightaways. I had my doubts about what I could do with him, but I still figured that was the best place to be, and it worked.
That marked the end of one of the most dominant speed weeks ever, as Yarborough had won the pole, won his qualifying race, led the most laps, and captured the Harley J. Earl Trophy. It goes without saying that Cale Yarborough will forever go down as one of the greatest to ever take to the high banks at the world center of racing.
Thank you, Tim. Coming up, we'll head to 1999 and relive Jeff Gordon's second victory in the Daytona 500.
Crowd spinning your hand, nothing stopping you. Not a chair, creaky stair, or even engine repair. Crowd spinning your hand, nothing you can't do. Make it on, make it John, or that kitchen hat on. Crowd spinning your hand, nothing stopping you.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live presents the Legends of the Great American Race. While many remember Jeff Gordon's victory in the 1997 Daytona 500 that featured Hendrick Motorsports crossing the line 1, 2, and 3, Jeff's second victory in the 41st running of the Great American Race might just be even more impressive. Here's Kurt Becker.
Momentum for NASCAR was at an all-time high as the calendar turned to 1999, as the sport was coming off a landmark 50th season that featured two of racing's biggest names capturing the sport's two most coveted trophies. Dale Earnhardt had started the 1998 campaign by finally landing the Harley J. Earl Trophy as the winner of the Daytona 500, and the year had come to a close with Jeff Gordon hoisting the Winston Cup, his second straight series championship and third overall. Gordon's championship momentum carried into the start of the 1999 season as he nabbed the pole for the 41st running of the Daytona 500. Starting alongside of him on the front row would be highly touted rookie Tony Stewart. Gordon and Stewart led the winners of Thursday's dual races, Earnhardt and Bobby Labonte, and a full field of hungry contenders to the green flag.
Coming down to the line, Brett Favre standing down there ready to put the green flag. He's the honorary starter here this afternoon, and the green flag is in the air, and the Daytona 500 is underway.
Gordon led the opening lap, but Labonte quickly took the top spot in a quest to win the 500 for the first time after finishing runner-up the prior year. While Gordon and Labonte both looked strong early, there was a Richard Childress Racing driver, not Dale Earnhardt, but his teammate, who was becoming part of the storyline as well.
Challenge for the lead on the back straightaway.
Jeff Gordon feels the heat from the outside. Mike Skinner putting on the moves down the back straightaway. He'll get the lead into turn three.
First time Skinner's tried the high side today. It has worked.
Mike Skinner was still looking for his first points-paying victory in the Cup Series, but the fact he was leading laps at Daytona did not come as a surprise. RCR was known for its super speedway prowess, and Skinner himself had been the pole sitter for the Great American Race just 2 years earlier. While Chevrolets and Pontiacs took turns leading throughout the first quarter of the race, it was a Ford which took control just shy of lap 60.
It looks to me like it's going to be Dale Jarrett who has the lead, but not for long because he's just getting up to speed in turn four, and Rusty Wallace has a full head of steam coming up on him.
Rusty goes to the high side. Jarrett still winding up that Ford power plant. Rusty Wallace swings by him with a top spot. spot.
That was the start of a 64-lap stretch led by Wallace and what was at the time known as the Penske Racing South Ford. And with Wallace entrenched at the front of the field, it looked like it might be the second straight year for a NASCAR Cup Series champion driver to score an elusive Daytona 500 victory. After Earnhardt had won the race in 1998 in his 20th attempt, Wallace was trying to win the Daytona 500 for the first time in his 17th try. As for the flow of the race, the event was caution-free until lap 96. But it was when the second caution flew at lap 123 that Wallace's stint at the front of the field was briefly interrupted. Teammate Jeremy Mayfield edged Wallace for the top spot, racing back to the caution flag, before two-time Daytona 500 winner Bill Elliott took the lead on pit road with a two-tire stop. Wallace would return to the point just a few laps after the restart, but a familiar Daytona 500 storyline struck when a multi-car accident unfolded on lap 135.
Problems now, middle of the field. Dale Jarrett breaks three. Other cars now begin to spin. Others go upside down. Jarrett then comes down on his tires. We have Elliott Sadler up high. Sterling Marlin and Terry Labonte. Labonte goes nose first to the inside wall. We have 6, 7, 8, 10, 11 cars stacked up, including Mark Martin out here, Jeff Burton, Steve Park.
Following pit stops during that caution period, Mike Skinner would find himself leading for the third time on the day, thanks to a two-tire stop. It did not take long, though, for Wallace to reassume the lead, this time for what he hoped would be for good, with less than 50 laps to go. The fourth caution flag of the day at lap 175 would bunch the field one final time, threatening the Penske stranglehold at the front of the pack. With 15 laps to go and with Wallace still leading, Mayfield lost the draft as Earnhardt, Gordon, and Skinner began marching toward the front. And as the final 10 laps neared, Gordon made a three-wide move to the inside of Wallace and Skinner, pulling off one of the most thrilling passes in Daytona history.
Here's Jeff Gordon going to try and take second away from Dale Earnhardt, take the lead away from Rusty Wallace if he can.
And Mike Skinner's going to go for it too. They're three wide for the lead into turn number two. Rusty's in the middle of the racetrack. Skinner up high, Gordon down low. They're still three wide off turn two.
Three abreast off the corner, halfway down the super stretch. Now four wide. One car breaks down. Lowe gets back in line. Michael Waltrip with a bonsai move doesn't pay off. Skinner to the high side. Rusty in the middle. Gordon down low.
Still three wide for the lead. In turn three, late in the Daytona 500, Gordon low. Wallace in the middle. Skinner up high. Then Earnhardt and Schrader. They're all snarling off the corner.
I don't think anybody has ever seen anything like we're witnessing here in the final laps. 10 to go.
Wallace tried to hold strong in the middle despite a lack of drafting help before eventually plummeting towards the bottom of the top 10. With Wallace out of the picture as the white flag flew, it was clear that the 1999 Daytona 500 would be settled between the two drivers who had combined to win five of the last six series championships, Gordon and Earnhardt.
Can anybody get by Jeff Gordon? He pulls him down the super stretch. Earnhardt looks inside, looks outside. Still Gordon in three.
Gordon is holding his line right now. Earnhardt has to make the move. Nothing there down low. Gordon's car glued to the bottom of the racetrack off turn number four. Still single file. One last chance for Earnhardt.
Gordon holds low off four. Here's Earnhardt on the apron. Gordon moves low to block. They come to the tri-oval. Earnhardt will not be able to do anything with him. Jeff Gordon wins the Daytona 500 for a second time.
I got to thank Dale Earnhardt for what a great race that was. I tell you, he pushed me hard, and I think that it makes this Daytona 500 victory even sweeter because it's a dream come true to be able to race a guy like that, and especially to be able to finish ahead of him when he's all over your bumper and even a little closer than that at times. And I tell you what, it was just really tight racing out there. I got some momentum, got a push, and got up there to the front. And then I was just trying to watch my mirror and see if I could keep those guys behind me. And the best in the business, especially when it comes to Daytona, is Dale Earnhardt. And he made me work very hard for it.
The 1999 Daytona 500 will be remembered for some thrilling racing and perhaps for Rusty Wallace's memorable run, which nonetheless saw the Great American Race elude his grasp. But maybe more than anything else, it will be remembered as a watershed moment that cemented Jeff Gordon's status as a superstar in the sport.
Thank you, Kurt. Coming up, we'll go back to 2004 and relive the classic battle between Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Tony Stewart.
Hey, everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Our trip through some of the legends of the Great American Race now has us in 2004. Dale Earnhardt Jr. always faced a ton of pressure for being the son of the Intimidator. That pressure was always even higher in the Daytona 500. In 2004, Jr. thrived under that pressure, but he had to beat one of the sport's best to do it. Tim Catalfamo is back with the story of the 46th Daytona 500.
2004 brought about more change for NASCAR than arguably any other year. It saw the introduction of Nextel as the new title sponsor of the series, the Chase for the Cup format, and much, much more. What didn't change from the end of 2003 to the start of 2004 was the expectations for Roush Racing. Matt Kenseth was coming off of a dominant championship-winning season, the first for Roush, and the team was as stacked as ever. In fact, the driver who probably had the least expectations for the team entering 2004, Greg Biffle, actually won the pole for the season opening Daytona 500. Unfortunately for Biffle, an engine change during the week led to him having to start from the rear and not actually leading the field to the green flag. The driver who ultimately led the field to the green flag was the winner of the first dual race from Thursday, Dale Earnhardt Jr. The other driver who moved up on the inside line after Biffle's engine change was Tony Stewart, meaning the sport's two biggest names who had yet to win a Harley J. Earl Trophy were nose to tail leading the field to the green flag, just after the President of the United States, George W. Bush, gave the command to fire engines.
And to call the start of the Daytona 500, the President of the United States, George Bush.
Here they come to the green.
And they're on the way up into turn number one with Dale Earnhardt Jr. on the point. Elliott Sadler in the outside front row, stacked up, double wide all the way through the field.
Jr. paced the opening laps of the race until the first caution flag flew. Roush's engine struggles became apparent again when Mark Martin's motor expired. The rest of the Roush cars were officially put on high alert when Jeff Burton's engine also went lights out on lap 25. During a stretch of pit stops, Stewart was able to take the lead for the first time in the race and showed that he was right there with Earnhardt Jr. as the favorite to win the 500. Near the 150-mile mark, we saw more 500 dreams end prematurely when Rusty Wallace was one of three drivers involved in an accident on the Daytona Superstretch.
Rusty Wallace and Ken Schrader got together coming onto the Superstretch, Joe. Rusty got turned into Schrader. A lot of damage to the Miller Dodge, also the Schwan's Dodge as well. Jeff Green got a piece of the action. His car sits at rest midway down the back straightaway.
After that caution period, the crowd was treated to great action at the front of the field between Stewart and Earnhardt Jr. That was until the big one that always seems to happen at Daytona got started when two rookies collided.
Johnny Sauter was on the bottom. He got loose, overcorrected, slid up the track, pinched everybody else up into the wall, and then as they continued down the super stretch, it really broke loose in front of Mike Bagley.
Yeah, it's a junkyard. Got Terry Labonte involved. Scott Riggs got some. Kevin LePage just spun around. Larry Foyt slowed his car down. He gets through, though, but the cars with a lot of damage include Ryan Newman, Sterling Marlin, Robbie Gordon, Brian Vickers, Jamie McMurray, Michael Waltrip, and one other car that is on the roof down to the inside of the racetrack on its top now as we have about five, six cars littered here on the super stretch.
That car that is upside down with the heavy damage to it is Michael Waltrip's car. The safety crews are there immediately.
Shockingly for a Daytona 500, that would be the final caution flag of the race, meaning the final 120 laps would be contested under the green flag. During that stretch, it looked like it would be Stewart's day in the sun. The Joe Gibbs Racing driver led for stints of 20, 27, and 28 consecutive laps on his way to leading a race-high 98 circuits. With so much green flag racing, strategy played a role in a big way. Surprisingly, on the final round of pit stops, underdog Scott Wimmer was able to find his way to the front of the field. But by working with Earnhardt, Stewart found his way back to the front with 25 laps to go.
Wimmer up the racetrack. Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr. change lanes. Now Wimmer blocks Stewart. Stewart now has to jump on the binders, but Wimmer again to the high side of the racetrack. Tony Stewart blows by and retakes
takes the lead.
At that point in the event, it was clear that the 46th running of the Great American Race would be settled between Earnhardt and Stewart. The crowd erupted in applause when Junior was able to work his way past Smoke with 20 laps to go.
They're side by side for the lead, coming off turn two.
Tony Stewart up high, Dale Earnhardt Jr. down low. They are door to door, racing for the lead. Now Stewart will reach out and grab the top spot. Earnhardt falls back in line, now rushes up against him. They almost make contact. Earnhardt back to the lead in three.
With no one else in contention, Earnhardt just had to hold off Stewart as he took the white flag.
Everybody on their feet in Daytona. Dale Earnhardt Jr. now with a three-car length advantage over Tony Stewart. Dale Earnhardt Jr. looking for the checkers.
Coming off turn four to the line to settle the Daytona 500, Dale Earnhardt Jr. pulls down to the start-finish line. He will win the 46th running of the Great American Race.
It was a very emotional ending to the sport's biggest race. Stewart had come up short again, while Jr. was able to win his first 500 nearly 3 years to the day after his father's tragic death on the final lap of the 2001 Daytona 500.
I'm happy as hell to win the Daytona 500, and I'm glad I got to race my buddy Tony Stewart for the win. I'm glad Michael's okay. That was a scary-looking accident, and this has got to be the greatest day of my life.
With so much change and positive momentum going for the sport, a win in the sport's biggest race by the sport's most popular driver would set the table for what would be one of the most memorable years in the history of NASCAR.
Thank you, Tim. Coming up, we'll fast forward 2 years and highlight the 2006 running of the Great American Race.
Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, designs and manufactures reliable and powerful warning lights, white illumination lighting, sirens, controllers, and warning systems for the automotive, aviation, and mass notification industries worldwide. Whelan products are designed, sourced, and manufactured in America and tested on site to meet the toughest industry standards. Whelan Engineering, manufactured in America for over 70 years. We never left, and we're here to stay. This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live presents the Legends of the Great American Race. A few weeks ago, the motorsports world honored Jimmy Johnson as he was inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. A big part of that Hall of Fame career was Johnson's run of dominance from 2006 to 2010. And that run started with the 2006 Daytona 500. Kurt Becker is back with that story.
As the stars of the NASCAR Cup Series ready to begin yet another season-long campaign, they once again descended on the shores of Daytona Beach, Florida. The occasion was Speed Week's 2006, and it would culminate with the 48th running of the Daytona 500. The driver in the spotlight was Tony Stewart. He had just won his second series championship in 2005, but was still winless in the Great American Race, having gone without a victory in seven prior attempts. As a result, he held the dubious distinction of being regarded as one of the best never to win a Harley J. Earl Trophy. But Stewart seemed determined to change that and looked strong early in Speed Weeks, leading late in the exhibition Bud shootout until he was passed with two laps to go by his rookie teammate Denny Hamlin. Those two Joe Gibbs Racing cars were joined by the Hendrick Motorsports contingent, most notably defending winner Jeff Gordon, as favorites for the 500. Gordon, in fact, qualified on the outside of the front row and proved it was no fluke by winning his qualifying race 4 days later. But on race day for the 2006 Daytona 500, over 200,000 fans rose to their feet as a surprising name led the field to the green flag.
43 drivers coming down to the line. Pick your favorite, tighten the seatbelt, and hang on. The Daytona 500 about to go green. Green flag is in the air. They break for turn number one. Down to the bottom of the racetrack goes Jeff Burton.
That pole position was the first for Jeff Burton in 5.5 years. Burton led the first 18 laps of the event until the caution flag flew because of debris. And while Burton looked strong, there would be 8 leaders in the first 50 laps of the event. Stewart and another former series champion, though, were beginning to establish themselves as favorites.
Here at Daytona, it is on. Matt Kenseth has taken the lead. That move took place up in turn one.
But Stewart changes lanes to the bottom. Tony Stewart to the lead in three.
Stewart paced the field for 20 consecutive laps, while Kenseth led 23 straight, until a six-car accident brought the action to a halt on lap 80.
Whoa, trouble up in turn number three. Jeff Green turned down to the racetrack. Back up and into
J.J. Yaley collecting Joe Nemechek. Carl Edwards is up and over one car, and they're locked together, sliding down the racetrack in the middle of turns 3 and 4.
During the next stint of the race, a new driver inserted his name into the conversation, and he happened to be the 2004 winner of the Great American Race.
And up front, battle for the lead. Here comes Dale Jr. to the inside of Kevin Harvick. They work by the lap machine of Nemechek. Wheel to wheel for the lead again in Daytona.
Jimmy Johnson crosses over, falls in behind Dale Earnhardt Jr. to give him drafting help on the inside. And now it's Harvick left all alone. Dale Jr. goes to the lead.
So as the race passed the halfway mark, the names at the top of the leaderboard were Stewart, Kenseth, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. But on lap 107, two of those three drivers were involved in an incident that would adversely impact their chances of victory.
Behind them, three wide, Kenseth on the bottom, and they make contact. Kenseth goes off in the grass, driving in a straight line, loses control, up the racetrack, and collects no one. You have got to be kidding me. He slides up, bangs the wall, does not touch anyone else. A scary ride for Matt Kenseth.
Caution is on the speedway. Matt Kenseth, one of the strongest cars in the field, in trouble over again. In turn three,
Tony Stewart and Matt Kenseth made contact, Barney, and it was Matt Kenseth that got forced off into the grass.
Kenseth was able to continue, but he was never able to work his way back to the front of the field, despite having led 28 laps on the day. And while Stewart did not sustain any damage, he was penalized and sent to the tail end of the field for what NASCAR deemed aggressive driving. Stewart was able to work his way up through the running order, but was sent to the tail end of the field again, this time due to a violation on a lap 126 pit stop. In the latter half of the event, all three of Hendrick Motorsports' young guns, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, and Brian Vickers, took turns at the point and showed it was not just Jeff Gordon who had potential to bring back the checkered flag for HMS. Gordon, in fact, led only one lap all day before getting swept up in a multi-car accident with less than 15 laps to go. Johnson was the leader on the ensuing restart, and he seemed to have the race in hand, but another multi-car crash forced the race into overtime.
Trouble! The wall. Off the Jeff Burton is in the wall. Jamie McMurray head on into the outside retaining wall. Three cars involved as they spin down the back straightaway.
The pressure was on for Johnson, who led the field to green on the final restart ahead of Casey Mears and Ryan Newman. Johnson would need to hold off those two, with Dale Earnhardt Jr. also looking to make a run in the final laps.
Final time into turn number one. It's Jimmy Johnson, Ryan Newman, and Casey Mears. Dale Jr. goes to the outside of Elliott Sadler, but it may be too little too late. Jimmy Johnson, off turn two, leads it.
Here's Jimmy Johnson, Ryan Newman, Casey Mears, the front three to the back straightaway for the final time. Jimmy Johnson not having any challenges from Ryan Newman until he steps to the outside. Here goes Ryan Newman, but they all leave Newman hung out to dry as they race back to the corner.
Battle's going to be for second for the moment. Casey Mears and Ryan Newman. Jimmy Johnson looks in the rearview mirror. Trouble further back. Greg Biffle goes around, but Jimmy Johnson is headed to victory lane.
Jimmy Johnson off turn four comes into the trioval with plenty of breathing room. They're battling it out for second. Jimmy Johnson's going to win the 48th Daytona 500.
The victory was an emotional one for the California driver. Not only was it Johnson's first Daytona 500 victory, but also it was accomplished despite the absence of his crew chief, Chad Knaus.
You are now a Daytona 500 winner. You've been so close so often. Tell us about today's race.
I can't believe it. I am so proud of this race team. Obviously, it's been a tough start for us to get started here in the 2006 season, but for these guys to step up as they have, during Grubb filling in as crew chief, the team rallying, I had new responsibilities. We had a great Los Monte Carlo. Everything was there, and once I got towards the front at the end of the race, I knew we were in good shape in those closing laps. I had a feeling Casey Mears, my good friend, was going to play a part in the victory, and I'm glad he did.
Johnson hoisting that Harley J. Earl trophy as the winner of the Great American Race was a sign of things to come in what would be a magical and championship-winning 2006 for the future Hall of Famer.
Thank you, Kurt. Coming up, we'll head to 2016 to relive one of the closest finishes in NASCAR history.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. As we tell the story of some of the greatest legends of the Great American Race, the biggest Daytona 500 legend amongst the current crop of drivers is undoubtedly Denny Hamlin. Denny has three Harley J. Earl trophies to his name, and his first one came in 2016 in the most dramatic way possible.
The lead-up to the Daytona 500 is never short on storylines, but as the 2016 running of the Great American Race neared, it seemed like there was more to talk about than ever. The race was supposed to be three-time series champion Tony Stewart's final chance to capture a Harley J. Earl trophy, after he announced in the fall of 2015 that 2016 would be his last as a Cup Series driver. But in a cruel turn of events, Stewart suffered a broken back in a dune buggy crash just weeks before the start of the season. Replacing Stewart would be Brian Vickers, who was getting one final shot at 500 glory. Also absent from the track during speed weeks was three-time Daytona 500 champion Jeff Gordon, who had stepped away from the racetrack and into the broadcast booth following the 2015 season. Replacing Gordon in the legendary number 24 was a youngster from a famous family, Chase Elliott. Elliott stole headlines by capturing the pole for the race and joining the ranks of Jimmy Johnson, Danica Patrick, and Austin Dillon as drivers who had done so in their rookie season. Elliott was joined on the front row by Matt Kenseth, but much of the focus on race day was dedicated to row two. Dale Earnhardt Jr. was looking for his third 500 victory after dominating his qualifying race on Thursday. The other dual winner was Kyle Busch, who was coming off of a championship-winning season in 2015 and looking for his first win in the Great American Race. Fans in the newly completed Daytona Rising grandstands were all standing as those four led a star-studded field of 40 cars to the green flag.
Pace car is on pit road. The green flag is out, and there goes Chase Elliott, drafting help from his teammate. Down at the inside of the track, Junior is there, pushing him through the tri-oval and into turn one for the first time today.
Elliott was able to pace the field for the first few laps before handing the lead over to Earnhardt Jr. Joe Gibbs Racing began to show their strength as Kyle Busch took the lead near the 50-mile mark of the event. And shortly after that lead change occurred, the pole sitter found himself in some trouble exiting turn four.
They came together off of turn number four, sending Chase Elliott for a wild spin toward the tri-oval. About four or five laps before that incident, Chase almost lost it off of turn number four, right when the 31-degree banking goes away. May have got loose a lap ago. Unfortunately, Regan Smith was to his inside. They made contact, sending Chase Elliott into that wild spin.
Following that caution, it was another Joe Gibbs Racing driver, Denny Hamlin, who would assume control of the race, leading for a 34-lap stretch. That stint at the front would come to a close when the second caution flag of the race flew after Hamlin's teammate, Carl Edwards, and Vickers were both involved in a multi-car crash.
Trouble off of turn number four. Brian Vickers gets loose, overcorrects the car, and comes back across in front of traffic into the tri-oval. Not sure if everybody was able to avoid or not, but a couple of close moments off the corner as Vickers just simply got loose, then overcorrected and went spinning toward the start-finish line.
Carl Edwards got a piece of that. Trevor Bayne getting a piece of that as they worked off turn number four.
That caution and restart shook up the running order a bit as Jimmy Johnson was able to take the lead away from Hamlin on the restart. Johnson then swapped the lead with Kyle Busch as the race neared the halfway point. A hard crash involving Chris Buescher and Matt DiBenedetto brought the caution flag out right near that 250-mile mark. On the ensuing round of pit stops, Hamlin was able to take the lead once again after a two-tire change. This time, Hamlin didn't lose the lead on the restart and cemented himself as the favorite to win the race, leading 60 of the next 61 laps. Through pit stops, the lead went through a few different drivers, with Hamlin's teammate and two-time Daytona 500 champion, Matt Kenseth, assuming the lead on lap 160. It looked like another dominant segment of the race for the Toyotas that couldn't be broken up at the front when one of their biggest challengers fell victim to yet another crash coming off turn four.
Trouble off of turn number four. One car breaks loose in the lead pack, gets into the inside wall at a ton, continues to spin toward the infield. It is Dale Earnhardt Jr., who was the first car in the outside lane. It looked like he tried to move back to the inside of the racetrack off turn four. There was contact and a long sliding spin for Dale Jr.
Kenseth remained at the front of the field, even through another caution that involved Greg Biffle and Danica Patrick, As the white flag flew, it appeared it was Toyota's race to lose. Even though Hamlin had dominated the race, it looked like the 500 might be out of reach as Kenseth, Martin Truex Jr., and Kyle Busch battled it out for the lead. Hamlin wasn't concerned with his chances looking bleak, however, as we saw one of the most thrilling final laps in NASCAR history.
One more trip around Daytona.
One more try to the outside lane for Kevin Harvick. He's up to fourth. Hamlin pulls up in front of him. Denny Hamlin's going to try the high side. That'll allow Edwards to jump to his inside lane. Edwards looking for fourth. It's all Matt Kenseth.
Here they come up the Daytona Superstretch for the final time. The front three are fine right now in Kenseth, Truex, and Kyle Busch. But here comes Hamlin storming at the outside of the racetrack for second.
And that outside lane up to the second spot led by Denny Hamlin. Throws the block, does Matt Kenseth. He's out of shape. Here comes Martin Truex Jr. to the bottom.
Checkered flag waving at the start-finish line. Who will get there first? It's Truex on the inside, Hamlin on the outside, and too close to call. Denny Hamlin showing up as the race winner. That is unofficial. Truex coming home second. Kyle Busch third by 1/100th of a second. Denny Hamlin has won the 58th running of the Daytona 500.
That was an amazing finish.
It was a banner day for Toyota with their drivers finishing 1-2-3. But there was a variety of emotions for that stable. Hamlin was ecstatic in victory lane. Truex was devastated after coming up just short. And Kenseth felt like he had the rug pulled out from under him after going from 1st to 14th in the final turn.
I did all I could. I thought I had it. You know, that last couple feet before the line, Denny just creeped out on me. I should have probably tried to rub him a little bit harder because I had, you know, maybe a foot on him for a long ways from turn four all the way to here.
I felt pretty good about it, and then we came off turn two, and I saw Denny had a really, really big run, and I felt like he was going to go around me regardless. And, you know, right there I tried to block a little bit, and just the air got me loose off of four, and I lost some momentum. So just trying to go for the win. I guess, you know, I should have stayed in front of Martin and probably ran second, but we're not here to run second.
You have been to victory lane many, many times. Where does this one stack up?
It's the best. I mean, it's just the best. It's the biggest race of my life. The Daytona 500 is, as a kid, this is the pinnacle of our sport, and I'm just proud to be here.
It was the realization of a dream that began in elementary school for Hamlin. Little did he or anyone else realize, though, that his victory in the 2016 Daytona 500 would be the start of a Daytona dynasty for the Virginia driver.
Thank you, Tim. Coming up, we'll close out the show by honoring the driver who has won more Daytona 500s than anyone else.
This is NASCAR Live presents Legends of the Great American Race. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. No show highlighting the biggest legends of the great American race would be complete without honoring Richard Petty. The King stands alone with 7 victories in the Daytona 500. Let's fall back to February 15th, 1981, when he won his landmark 7th Harley J. Earl Trophy.
Richard Petty around Jimmy Beans, followed by Cale Yarborough and Bodine, who are down a lap. Allison works his way underneath the car of Bill Elswick, trying to hunt him down, but he's got precious little time.
This time, Petty stays down one racing lane away from the wall, a little bit lower than the accustomed blind he used the last 3 or 4 laps.
Petty comes down across the line, and Harold Kinder gives him the indication. 2 laps to go for Richard Petty. The STP Buick heads off into turn number 1. Here comes Bobby Allison across the line as he continues to shorten that interval between himself and leader Richard Petty, but he's not going to have enough time to do it unless Richard has some trouble. The battle for the third spot is going to be... make that the fourth position. Should be a good one right down to the wire. Buddy Baker trails off into the number 1 corner as Dale Earnhardt is locked there, and you can bet that Earnhardt is waiting until that last lap to make his move on Buddy Baker. Down the back straightaway. Up into turn number 4 goes leader Richard Petty to Dave Despain.
Petty focusing every bit of his years of experience, his savvy on that race car, trying to sense any problems that might be corrupting here as a result of that tire change, or more correctly, the decision not to change tires.
At the start of Speed Week, it was inconceivable that anyone but Bobby Allison would
win this Daytona 500 in Petty through strategy and cutting and some sharp pit work. Is at the head of the field of the Daytona 500. He has taken the white flag and is in turn two.
And nary a bobble as he works his way midway up the banking and now exiting turn number two. Richard Petty with J.D. McDuffie ahead of him, who will not be a factor. Petty down the back stretch in control.
Richard Petty taking his classic line right out tight to the wall. Fans waving and screaming as he goes by. Richard Petty into the third turn banking and on his way.
The Petty dynasty marches on at Daytona International Speedway. Richard Petty high up against the wall coming off turn four looking for the checkered flag.
Richard Petty picks his way out of that corner, drops down to the apron of the track to give everybody else a little racing room. And ladies and gentlemen, this crowd is going wild at Daytona as Petty takes the checkered flag and wins the Daytona 500.
Oh, what a trip down memory lane it's been tonight. We'll have to see if another legend of the Great American Race emerges in Sunday's 66th renewal of the Daytona 500. Join us for NASCAR Live Race Day beginning at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. For Tim Catalfamo, Kurt Becker, and the entire MRN team, I'm Mike Bagley. Thank you so much for joining us for a special edition of NASCAR Live, Legends of the Great American Race. So long.
Today's show was produced by Trey Downey. The executive producer for the Motor Racing Network is Ryan Horn. The president of MRN is Chris Schwartz. Legends of the Great American Race is a production of the Motor Racing Network.